Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today, we've got quite a story. Our listener sent over a whole stack of materials, local reports, newspaper bits from the time, even some, you know, folkloric analysis about this really unsettling event in Ohio back in the 70s.
Yeah, we're opening the file on Linda Smith and Lemmy Leaf.
And our mission here, it feels like we're trying to map something out, right? Like emotional territory.
Exactly. We're drawing a line, trying to pinpoint where the actual verifiable tragedy, the facts, the record, just slams headfirst into this wild, sensational folklore, the legend.
Mm-hmm.
And this whole story, this wedding after a funeral, it's just a perfect, almost painful case study. It shows how public grief can just spill over across all sorts of social lines and turn something deeply private into this legend that people still argue about, even now. Legend versus record.
Okay, so let's set that stage properly. 1978, small town Ohio. And you really have to picture this. It's not some big city where you can just blend in.
No, absolutely not. This is the kind of place where everyone knows your name, probably your dog's name too. Gossip travels fast, really fast.
Yeah.
And that social setting is key. Back then, the rules around big life events, you know, births, deaths, marriages, they were pretty rigid.
Yeah.
Very defined, often tied to church or just strong community traditions.
Right.
So if you stepped outside those lines, people noticed, and often they judged.
Okay, so into that tight-knit world, we have Linda Smith and Lemmy Leaf. And the sources paint this picture like they were totally head over heels, mm-hmm. just wrapped up in that excitement before the wedding. You know the feeling. The venue's booked, invites are out, the future looks all mapped out. They were just weeks away.
Yeah, and it's so important to really get that sense of anticipation, that baseline expectation.
Right.
Think about the dress.
Yeah.
Maybe it's hanging in Linda's closet. Pristine white. Maybe she made it. Maybe it was from the local shop. It's not just a dress. It's the whole future they planned hanging right there.
Yeah.
In their minds, and probably in the whole town's mind,
yeah.
that wedding day was a sure thing. Guaranteed.
That image, the dress, just waiting, and it makes what happened next just brutal. The contrast is.
Mm. It was completely abrupt.
Yeah.
Devastating. Nobody saw it coming.
Lemmy Leaf died. A car accident, just weeks before the wedding day.
Yeah. And that anticipation we talked about, it didn't just disappear. It, like, instantly flipped into just absolute shattering grief, devastation. The whole community saw this bright future just erased overnight.
And that shock, that immediate community-wide shock, that's really the catalyst for everything that follows, isn't it?
Absolutely. When a tragedy hits that close to something everyone was expecting, like a wedding, the grief that follows, it's never going to be normal, quote unquote.
Right.
The devastation changes Linda. She goes from being the bride-to-be to, well, the widow who never even got to say her vows.
And that specific tragic position she's in, plus all the emotional energy already poured into the wedding plans, that seems to be what leads to her very unconventional reaction.
Exactly. The community saw the shock, obviously. But what Linda did next, that's what took this personal heartbreak and turned it into this lasting legend, a legend that really makes you question what's acceptable when it comes to mourning.
Okay, so this is where it explodes outwards. The private crisis bursts out and becomes public. And it starts with this reported action, something really specific and, well, against the rules.
Yeah, the scene shifts.
Yeah.
Drastically.
Yeah.
The image now is think Dark Knight, clear sky, but in a cemetery.
Okay.
And right away, the sources start picking up rumors, whispers of something secret, something clandestine. The story starts circulating. And look, we have to be careful here. This definitely in the story goes category, but it caught on fast that Linda just couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle the finality.
Couldn't handle him being gone.
Right. So the rumor is she and her two brothers went to the cemetery late one night and disturbed Lemmy's grave.
Okay, let's just pause there. Because whether that actually happened or not, the idea of it,
right,
the implication is huge.
Oh, immediate. Absolutely.
This isn't just, you know, weeping at the graveside. This it's a defiance. And that act, or even just the rumor of it, would have split the community instantly. It's not quiet grief anymore. It's something else.
It crossed lines, big ones, social lines, probably legal lines too.
Yeah.
In a place that relies on structure, especially around death rites, disturbing a grave. That's like the ultimate taboo. Desecration.
Yeah.
It forced the whole town to grapple with something totally outside the norm, outside the accepted way of dealing with loss.
You can almost hear the whispers, the arguments starting right then. Some people probably felt sorry for her, you know. She's driven mad by grief, that kind of tragic figure.
There's a romantic tragedy angle, yeah.
But others, they'd see it as something darker, something like grief that won't end. Like, it's become destructive, chaotic. violating sacred ground.
And that's where you see the town needing an explanation, right? They have to make sense of this breakdown. From our deep dive perspective, that single rumor, the gravesite disturbance, verified or not, it becomes the engine. It drives the whole rest of the legend. It provides the necessary plot point, almost.
Because if the town is going to judge her for what comes next, they need a reason to label her as not rational first.
Exactly. That rumor gives them permission.
It sets the stage. Okay, she's already done this, so what follows makes a certain kind of horrifying sense.
Precisely. Symbolically, it's the moment Linda steps out of that expected role, the passive, weeping widow role. She becomes something else, the defiant mourner, maybe even the anti-hero of her own story.
That phrase, defiant mourner, that's powerful, especially thinking about the 1970s, the expectations for women dealing with grief.
Right. Women were supposed to be sad, fragile maybe, but quietly, within limits.
Yeah.
Defiant, especially something physical like interfering with remains, that completely flips the script. It challenges those patriarchal norms about death being final and the surviving woman just needing to adjust gracefully.
So once that line is crossed in the cemetery, real or rumored, the town's almost psychologically primed for whatever comes next. They're ready for it to get weirder.
Yeah, it escalates things way beyond a normal funeral. They've already decided she's transgressive.
Yeah.
Now they're just waiting. What's the next transgression?
And it came pretty quickly, didn't it? The unconventional vows.
Yes.
Linda decided, okay, I'm making this grief ritual public, very public.
It was such a statement. A profound act of defiance against death itself, against the finality of it all.
Mm-hmm.
Despite the accident, despite the funeral, she announces, nope, I'm still marrying him.
Wow.
And she invites the whole town to her house to witness this anti-wedding.
The image shifts again. We're out of the dark cemetery back into a home, but it's unsettling.
Deeply. Picture Linda. She's wearing the white dress we talked about earlier.
The one hanging in the closet?
That one.
But
she's not standing across from Lemmy. She's next to maybe an empty chair.
Where?
Or maybe his suit laid out, arranged on a stand.
Oh, man.
A stand-in. A silent symbol.
Mm.
And she's going to say vows to this absence, this representation.
And this wasn't just her alone processing. This was a performance, a public ritual.
A staged confrontation with reality, or maybe her reality.
Yeah.
She was demanding that the community participate in her refusal to accept that the car crash was the end.
Okay, so the central act. The vows are read out loud. To the empty chair, or the suit stand, and then this confirms the earlier rumor, right? The sources say the body was actually there.
Reportedly present, yes.
Yeah.
And this is where we really need to zoom in on the source material itself, because it gets tricky.
How so?
Well, one account specifically calls the deceased Max's corpse.
Max, but his name was Lemmy Leaf.
Exactly. It's a small detail, but it tells you so much. It shows how fast the actual facts started blurring. Even basic things like the guy's name. This was happening even in the early reporting.
Wow. So the focus wasn't even on Lemmy anymore, the person who died. It was all about the spectacle, the shock value.
Precisely. The focus shifted to the transgression, not the tragedy or the victim. The identity of the man became secondary to Linda's defiance.
Okay, so back to that room. The vows are being read. What about the people watching? The friends, family, neighbors she invited?
Imagine the pressure. Just think about being in that room. You're witnessing this incredibly intense, uncomfortable scene. You're forced, right then and there, to decide what you're seeing.
Yeah.
Is this the most powerful act of love imaginable? Love literally defying death?
Mm-hmm.
Or is this just madness, a total break from reality?
They stood there, reading lines written for a future that had been erased.
What gives this story its enduring power is the emotional violence of that juxtaposition. The beauty of the wedding attire and the finality of the circumstances. It forced every single person present to examine the limits of acceptable devotion and the boundaries of sanity.
And for you listening now, this really brings up a tough question. We talk about grief rituals, funerals, wakes, memorials. They have structures, rules, expectations.
Mm-hmm.
But how do we even categorize something like this? A ritual completely outside those norms. It was almost like she was demanding everyone else validate her private reality or delusion, maybe.
And because that reality, no matter how much love was behind it, involved, reportedly, disturbing remains, and then this very public display of a body that shouldn't have been there.
Yeah.
Well, it couldn't just stay personal.
No. It had to escalate.
Well, that defiance, it triggered the next logical step in the narrative.
Perfect.
Official intervention. The authorities had to get involved.
Right. So now the cold, bureaucratic structure of the state clashes with this raw, chaotic emotion. The public display, especially with the body allegedly there, it finally forces the hand of law enforcement, cemetery officials.
And this is where the story touches ground again, briefly.
Yeah.
The sources give us a solid anchor, a verifiable fact here, pulling us back from pure folklore for a moment.
Okay.
Because the intervention. That required legal steps. There's documentation, police reports maybe, cemetery records certainly. These give us a hard stop point in the timeline. A documented reality check against all the swirling rumors.
Let's really nail this down. This is the pattern breaker, the cold fact. Yeah. What did the records show?
Authorities stepped in. The cemetery records confirm it. The remains were recovered, and they were officially reinterred. Put back in the grave. Properly this time.
Okay. So the system tries to impose order. Tries to enforce closure.
That's the implication, exactly. The state is essentially saying, okay, a line was crossed here. We can't tolerate this public display, regardless of the grief involved. The reinterment was the official stamp. Lemieux's story ends here. Closed.
But official records rarely kill a good story, do they? Especially one this intense.
Not a chance. That piece of paper, the reinterment record, it didn't magically erase what people thought they saw or what they'd heard. It didn't stop the town talking about what happened between the alleged grave disturbance and the body being recovered.
Right. They still had to process that bizarre wedding scene.
Exactly. The official action just confirmed Linda had broken the law. It didn't explain why. It didn't answer the deeper questions about her state of mind.
And we need to understand why that intervention was even necessary. Disturbing the dead, whatever the reason, it triggers a legal response.
Right. And that creates this key difference between the official record, which is probably very dry, you know, remains recovered, reinterred, May 12th, case closed, and the local folklore. The folklore thrives on the chaos, the unanswered questions, the why.
So the intervention didn't shut the story down. It almost validated the strangeness of it all.
In a way, yeah. It put an official seal on the fact that something truly bizarre had happened. It fed the narrative that Linda was now completely detached from reality, even if Lemmy was finally officially back in the ground.
But the story was already out. Authorities were involved. And that seems to have just added fuel to the fire for the next stage, the rumor explosion.
Yeah, this is where it really takes off into pure legend territory. After the reinterment, later tellings of the story start tacking on these incredibly sensational details, things with no basis in any record we have.
Okay.
The initial tragedy was sad. The home wedding was shocking, deeply unsettling. But these later additions, they twisted Linda's story from a human tragedy into something else entirely, a kind of gothic, macabre, urban legend.
And these details are what give it that staying power, right? The things that make it travel far beyond that Ohio town.
Absolutely. These are the hooks.
So the imagery changes again. We go from the cemetery, the house wedding, to something much more domestic but sinister, a sealed refrigerator.
Oh, yeah. That specific image becomes this weird symbol of preserved abnormality, right in the heart of the home, the kitchen, corrupted domesticity.
Why a refrigerator? Is that common in these kinds of legends?
It pops up surprisingly often in folklore, dealing with hidden bodies or intents to halt decay.
Mm-hmm.
It's the ultimate symbol of rejecting the natural order, finality denied.
Right.
And psychologically for the community, it serves a purpose. Even after the reinterment, maybe they needed a more extreme explanation for Linda's earlier actions. They needed her to go fully, permanently mad to make sense of it all, to justify how they already felt about her.
So the big claim, the most sensational one, and again, we're firmly in urban legend territory here, is that Linda decided they would, quote, live together and perhaps have a family, and the method, keeping Lemmy inside the fridge.
Yeah. That pushes the story way beyond just intense grief. It lands squarely in the grotesque. And putting it in the kitchen, in a fridge, it makes the horror mundane, accessible almost, intimate. That makes it way more memorable, easier to share as a story. It's a potent symbol, life frozen in time, literally.
But it didn't stop there, did it? The legend needed more fuel.
Legends need action to stay alive.
Yeah.
So the second big rumor gets added again. Purely sensational, designed to shock, that she wouldn't just keep him there. She would occasionally take him out for a walk.
Oh, come on.
I know. It's narrative license gone wild. But you see the function? A body in a fridge is static. The walk rumor makes Lemmy an active participant, albeit in her delusion. It pushes Linda even further away from being someone you could possibly relate to or sympathize with.
Okay. And then the final darkest layer, the ultimate sensational twist.
Yeah. The rumor surfaces that about, say, 11 months later, Linda got pregnant. Had a child.
And the source, it implies.
The source just adds that chilling line. You already know how she got that child. And we have to be crystal clear. This is the absolute peak of the toxic, sensational urban legend attaching itself to the story. It serves as the final narrative blow against Linda, No basis in fact whatsoever.
It completes the transformation into something monstrous.
Completely. It pushes the story so far beyond any believable human behavior, even deeply disturbed behavior, that it serves a final purpose for the town, for the people telling the story. It cements her status. Total lunatic. Case closed, in their minds.
Okay, let's unpack that. Why these specific grotesque details? The fridge, the walks, this horrifying child rumor. Why do these things attach themselves to stories of public grief gone wrong? Why didn't the story just end with, you know, she moved away or she got help?
Well, think about it from the community's perspective. It's a defense mechanism, really. Psychological safety. When someone grieving does something truly transgressive, disturbing a grave, that bizarre wedding, it shakes the foundations. It challenges the community's sense of order, their own comfort level with death and grief. It whispers, if grief can make Linda do this, what could it do to me?
Okay. So by adding these utterly unbelievable, monstrous details, the fridge, the walks, the impossible child, the community pushes Linda so far outside the realm of recognizable human behavior.
Exactly. So far into gothic horror territory.
Well, that they don't have to identify with her pain anymore. They don't have to confront the terrifying idea that their own grief might someday become overwhelming, endless, uncontrollable.
Precisely. It gives them a clean break. Horrifying narrative, yes, but a clean one.
Yeah.
They can dismiss her entirely. See, she wasn't just grieving differently. She was completely, utterly mad, which in turn confirms that their normal, regulated, time-limited grief where you cry, you mourn for a bit, then you move on. That's the right way. The healthy way.
So the fear isn't really about the facts of loss. It's the fear that grief itself might not have an end date.
That's a huge part of it. They're more scared of endless grief than they are of a dead body.
That's quite an insight. The legend becomes a kind of dark comfort by creating this total aberration.
Yes. And that comfort is bought at the expense of Linda's real story. Her actual, complex, probably very painful truth. The facts of her deep love or initial defiance, that whole ritual, it all gets buried under this grotesque fantasy the community needed to create.
They couldn't handle the reality of love trying to defy death.
So they swapped it out for the easier narrative. Madness.
Okay, let's just quickly recap this whole journey for everyone listening. We started with a real documented tragedy, Lemmy Leaf's death in 1978.
Mm-hmm. Verifiable loss.
That led to this documented, deeply unconventional act of defiance, the home wedding, which in turn led to official intervention, the recovery and reinterment of the body.
Right, the anchor effect.
And from there, the legend just took over, exploded. The fridge, the walks, the child rumors, all these sensational layers bearing the original story.
And the core takeaway is just stark. Truth gets incredibly blurry, maybe even irrelevant, when that kind of profound private devastation meets a very public spectacle.
Yeah.
Linda's community, it seems, found it way easier to accept the idea of a mad woman with a corpse in her fridge than to accept a grieving woman whose love was so powerful, so complete, that it shattered the normal rules of behavior.
Which leaves us, and you listening, with a really provocative thought, I think. This story suggests that sometimes we aren't actually scared of the facts of grief, the sadness, the tears, the immediate pain.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe what really scares us is the idea that grief might not have an off switch.
Yeah.
That it could be endless, chaotic, something you can't control or regulate.
The facts just faded away. They got replaced by the fears that this story seemed to confirm.
Well, thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the edges of love, loss, and how legends endure.
The ring sits still, witnessing a love that refused to stop.